So, this is going to be a bit of a hard story to tell, and I'm going to try and convey everything that I can, but I still feel kind of uncomfortable, and that again is part of what I'm trying to talk about. So let's talk about my upbringing first of all, how I grew up. I'm a pretty liberal guy. I'm born to a Muslim family. We're not super religious, but my parents are very religious, like praying, doing all the stuff, the traditional, like Eid, Ramadan, all the Muslim things that a normal Muslim family would do. I grew up with two sisters and a mom. My dad was around from some of my childhood. He would like be here for 6 months, then go back to Sudan to help his family for like a year or two, and then come back. More recently, he's been with us longer, and he kind of like lives with us full time now, kind of. But right now he's away. But that kind of affected me as a boy as well, because I kind of always wanted that father role, that I never really had that father figure, which I thought is what really affected me, and I would get really sad about it. But as I grew up, I realized that, like, I didn't really need my dad as much. I kind of just grew up without him. And my mom kind of played that role as well, of the man and the woman in the house. And I don't like saying the man and the woman in the house, because again, that's kind of, traditional sexist and kind of against my beliefs. But I just say it for ease of use. So when I say those things, I'm not trying to push those roles onto you. That's just how I grew up. So, I would get, told off as a kid, as every kid does, and I would cry. And again, as I said earlier, I'd be told this idea that boys don't cry, boys shouldn't cry. And the problem was, is I was an emotional ass kid, okay? I would cry over everything. If I fell over, I would cry. If I got hit, I would cry. If I got told off or shouted at, I would cry. I was a really emotional kid. I'm still a bit emotional. Like, I still cry at me. Like, ah, just mercy, I was like holding back the tears. Because as I grew up, I began to stop showing my emotions outwardly. I was fed with these ideas that if you show your emotions, then you're weak. If you start crying, then the other person has won. Like as if they've conquered you in some sort of evil way, that they've beat you because they've made you cry. And I stopped doing that, because I didn't want to see as weak. I didn't want to be seen as weak. That's my big thing. I have a massive ego. Okay, I am an borderline or potentially a narcissist. Okay, I really love myself. So it wasn't any sort of self-loathing. It was just like, because I had to protect my ego, I had to conform to these ways. Okay, I was doing a lot of toxic masculine stuff, as I've said before. I had to conform to these ways. I had to, cover up with jokes, depression, lol, lol, imagine being sad and all this stuff. That's how I dealt with it. I dealt with it through my humor. That's why nowadays, anything bad happens, I'll bust a joke, because that's the only way I can deal with it. The only way I deal with anything bad is by, pardon me, is by having a joke be made out of it. You know what I mean? So, that's how I changed. I think the biggest change with me was like 15, 16, where I started becoming a lot more callous. I started, well, like my whole, like teenage years, I've always responded sarcastically or always answered back. But now I would answer back less emotionally and more like a rude, kind of like powerful, stern way to like push back and be super defensive. And like people notice this. Like if someone ever questioned me, I would go super defensive. Like I would totally just like put up a wall in front of myself and fire back, because I wouldn't want them to see any kind of weakness or any sign of pacificity in me, or like any sign of like submission, because to me that was implying that I was not strong. And that led to a lot of things. What it led to was isolation, first of all. Not the like expulsion version, the self-isolation. It's kind of like I ended up developing like a load of trust issues, because I didn't want to seem vulnerable to anybody, so I wouldn't tell anybody anything. I would either lie about something, or just not even try and speak to the people, because I hated it. I hated being vulnerable, or in any fashion vulnerable to other people, because I would think that they would use that against me at some point, and they would just leave me, and I didn't want to go through that. So I started isolating myself. I'm very good at dealing with the world by myself, because that's how I was taught and I was grown up to be. I can sit in my room all day and chill. But this was really bad for me. I didn't develop any deep connections with other people because I was too busy building up this facade, this wall between me and other people. I wouldn't let myself get close to anybody because I didn't want, you know, to be let down. I started conforming to the ideas of masculinity of, oh, I have to go to the gym, I have to get super built, I have to be super tough, which kind of helped, I guess, which didn't help it, because as I started, you know, being more toxic, and I started getting more attention from women, obviously, but I'm not going to blame women for this, because this was kind of my own internalized misogyny, the internalized ideas that I had, and it also didn't help the fact that I'm incredibly bright. Like, my whole life I've been told that I'm incredibly bright, and that meant that I always had very high expectations placed on me. I always had expectations of being the class, you know, the top of the class, or, you know, the guy who would get the really good grades. And I did get really good grades in the end in GCSEs. But I kind of felt like my entire life was just built up to be this thing that other people saw. This Muhammad that other people, you know, admired. You know, not this Muhammad that I myself really wanted to be. I had to be Muhammad Hassan, the lawyer, or Muhammad the, you know, the politician, or Muhammad the, you know, like the rich guy who, you know, did all these, or Muhammad the strong guy, you know, the athlete, you know, all these conforming to all these ideas, all these stereotypes. And I hated that. I didn't want to be any of those things. And that led to massive swings in my mood. I would go from insane amounts of motivation, but my motivation would wean and go very quickly, because it wouldn't be self-fulfilled motivation. It wouldn't be motivation coming from myself. I didn't want to get good grades. I could care less about good grades. I wanted to get them so I don't disappoint other people, okay? I'll tell you right now, I don't give a damn whether I get A's or A stars or go to Oxford, but I would be devastated if I didn't, because my mom would be devastated, or my teachers would be devastated, you know? And that ate away at me for ages, because I would go from, you know, having the same amounts of motivation, doing really, really good in school, to just lying down in my bed and doing nothing. But because I had to keep up this expectation, I would give in everything like the minute before it was due in. I'd procrastinate and then, you know, get my work done, but get it to a really high standard, because I'm still kind of bright. I can still get A's and A stars. I can't get 100%, but I can still get really good grades, so teachers don't, you know, assume anything is going on with me. So, you know, teachers never think that I'd be dealing with anything, because, you know, I can't. I'm top of the class. I'm the confident guy. I'm a house captain. You know, people admire me. People look up to me. I'm the funny guy. I'm the guy who makes everyone else's moods better. How can I be dealing with anything? So other people started viewing me, again, as that confident, outspoken person. But I, myself, was just not happy. I wasn't happy with having to fulfill these expectations that were placed upon me. And I got bored of life. I got really bored, because every day just felt like I was working towards, from year 7 to 11, I was working towards good GCSEs. So, and then once I got really good GCSEs, I was working towards really good A-levels, so then I could get into university, so then I could get a really good job, so then I could get a lot of money. And that just felt so unsatisfying and unfulfilling that I didn't have any passion for life anymore. So, on the 27th of December, after being with one of my really close friends, we had a lot of fun, we'd done some things, not anything like wrong, but like we were just drinking and just chilling, and I'd got really wasted, so messed up, like I couldn't walk straight, but I'd planned that out in my head, because I had a couple of pills. This is really hard to talk about, sorry that this is kind of been long-winded, but I'm just taking my time trying to say this. I had a couple of pills. I had some Xanax, and if anyone knows anything, Xanax and alcohol should never be mixed. In fact, you shouldn't really be taking either of them anywhere close to each other. I, of course, knew this, and I took three of them with a shot. Now, I knew that this wouldn't have an instant effect on me, so I was like, okay, let me go home. And I was literally on the car ride back, posting good snaps, and no one noticed anything. I was literally waiting for my body to shut down, because I was like, okay, if I'm going to go out, I'm going to go out on a high. So that's what I did. I got home. My body didn't react the way I wanted it to. I didn't die, thankfully. Thank God I didn't. I wouldn't be here saying this amazing podcast. Because instead my body vomited everything. And I've never felt as ill as I did. I was spewing vomit everywhere. It was disgusting. All over the bathroom upstairs next to my room, my bathroom, my personal one, there was just vomit all across the sink. It filled the sink. My head was over, like, it was terrible, okay? In fact, I even saw part of the pill because it didn't even digest properly. Like, the capsule of it, I vomited that out as well. And obviously my mom found out that I'd been doing that stuff, and I was coming from a Muslim family. Everything was terrible. Obviously I wasn't going to tell her that I just tried to kill myself. I wasn't in the mental capacity to do that. I was still totally wasted. I was totally gone. I couldn't even put together a sentence. I was literally facing in like half of my vomit. I was disgusting. My mom had to physically change me. She had to change all my bed sheets. The next day I had a terrible hangover. I can't even, like, it got, like, I'm so traumatized. I still have some PTSD from that because, like, I can't even smell. Like, if I even get a whiff of alcohol, my whole body just, like just tenses up and feels really ill because of that. But, yeah, I tried to commit suicide on December 27th, 2019. Now, a lot of you guys might realize something, that it's probably because I was unable to talk about why I didn't want to have these expectations. I didn't want to fulfill any sort of notion of, you know, because I'll explain this, like, I probably haven't, I'm listening to myself now and I haven't really explained it, but my expectations were, you're going to go to Oxford or Cambridge, you're going to go to a really good university, and then you're going to become a really rich lawyer, and you're going to live the great life. Okay, that's my expectation. I didn't want to or cared about being a lawyer. I just wanted to be happy. But I couldn't do those things because the expectations that were onto me. So I would lash out, or I would misbehave to get some sort of fun, but those would have negative consequences. And it got to the point where I couldn't talk to anybody about this, and I didn't want to talk about it, and I still don't want to. Like, even when I admit this to my friends, I said, don't pity me, please, because I don't want your pity. The last thing I want is your pity, or someone to say that they feel sorry for me, because that just makes me feel weak. And even as I'm saying this, I don't want comments telling me that, oh, I really feel for you, we're here for you. Like, it's just, I still feel so uncomfortable with that, because I'm still dealing with this internalized battle between my masculinity that has defined me for so many years. Like, am I that Muhammad who's gonna be a really rich lawyer who's, you know, a total alpha male, or am I that guy who just wants to chill and have fun and doesn't care about money or any of these things or any of these expectations? Like, I wasn't able to talk about these things, okay? I didn't want to be seen as weak. My ego wouldn't let me. My mom wanted to find out why I had done that thing. Okay, she was like, why did you drink? She thought that, oh, I just got peer pressure into it. It took me like 3 weeks to open up that, no, I tried to kill myself. And I haven't told anyone else in my family. If anyone in my family is listening to this, surprise. But, I remember crying in my room, like, for hours. Like, just in my room crying, because I tried to kill myself, and I was just crying because I told someone about it, and I felt weak. I felt so weak, and I hated it. So immediately, like, I get over things really quickly. This is my coping mechanism. Like, I don't deal with things by, like, you know, sitting down and talking about them and airing them out. I deal with things by closing off everything and getting on with it. Like, I can cry on a Sunday, like, really terribly, go to school the next day and act like nothing happened. Because when I'm around people, my body just, my brain just acts, like, really happy and really funny. Like, I can't stay angry or sad for long because I don't let people do that. And making me more masculine wouldn't have helped. In fact, making me more masculine, pushing me to do more work, pushing me to focus on school, pushing me to focus on rugby and being, you know, in the rugby A team, or, you know, being in the top quintile, all this stuff didn't help me. Okay, it made it worse. I didn't want to conform to these expectations, these societal expectations that were placed upon me by teachers, my peers, my friends, my parents, my family. Those are the things that broke me. Those are the things that had the biggest detriment to my mental health, okay? Because yes, I'm a really smart guy, but I don't want to fucking go to Oxford. I don't want to go to Cambridge. I if anyone asks me, Mohammed, what do you want to do with your life? People expect me to say prime minister, or, you know, lawyer, or, you know, teacher, or some kind of big philosopher. I just want to sit at home and skateboard. That's what I want to do. I want to talk sometimes on my podcast, but I want to sit at home, skateboard, play video games, and have, like, a girlfriend or something. That's what I actually want. That's what, really, that's deep down, that's what I want. I don't want these big, grandiose things that would make me be admired and stuff. Yeah, okay, I like the attention sometimes, but those things are so superficial to me. But I chased them for so long until I broke down. Okay, I couldn't deal with it anymore. I couldn't deal with, it wasn't me not fulfilling these expectations, because I was the smartest kid in my class. I was in the top quintile. I was a house captain. I was admired by people. I had girls who would talk to me all the time. I had those things. And I'm not saying that in a braggadocious way, but I'm saying that I got there and it didn't fulfill me. I didn't love them. So I attempted to go. I was like, this world isn't worth it anymore. And I tried to leave it. So when people say about this masculinity crisis, it's not a crisis of men becoming more feminine. It's not a crisis of men becoming weaker. It's your notions that they are becoming weaker. It's the fact that you're saying that they're becoming weaker that makes it worse. Men don't have to be told they're becoming weaker because they're talking about their emotions or they're going to therapy. Everyone has to go to therapy. I'm a massive believer that everyone, we are all crazy people. Human beings are insane, okay? You do not want to be, I would hate to have the ability to read people's minds, because if you could, you would read people's minds and realize how crazy we all are, especially in today's society. In fact, throughout history, we're filled with crazy, outlandish people who have insane things going on with their brains. Everyone's dealing with incredible things, whether you're a man or a woman. It's a human issue, okay? It's a human issue that I struggled with because I wasn't conforming to this masculine ideas if I did expose myself. And now that I am exposing myself, I'm feeling a sense of relief because I no longer have to deal with this internalized embarrassment, this internalized shame. I don't feel like any less of a man saying all those things to you. In fact, I feel more brave than ever saying those things to you. We need to recognize that men have been subject to subversive misogyny that has destroyed us. That's the crisis. The crisis is the sexist beliefs and ideas that we have that are not just detrimental to women, as I've said in the feminist video, but are just as detrimental, if not worse, to men. The ideas of a hierarchy between men and women is terrible. These expectations we put up on each other are totally made up. Masculinity is made up. We don't have to be more inclusive or tolerant of the notion that men don't have to conform. We have to get rid of that idea that there's a normal that you're not conforming to in the first place. No one is conforming to a normal. There is no normal. There's no normal man. Okay? You're human beings. We all are. We need to move away from this idea of masculinity that we have because it's self-destructive and it serves no purpose. Okay? Being a traditional man doesn't make you better at anything. It doesn't make you more productive in the workplace. It doesn't make you a smarter person. It doesn't make you a nicer person. It's totally superficial. How are we supposed to get people and men to speak about their issues if we hold on to these ideas of normality? I love punk rock and emo trap and men who wear nail polish and makeup and, you know, scream and talk about their emotions and heartbreak. And I totally relate with those things because that's what men are. They're men too. One of my favorite rappers is Juice WRLD, RIP. Because he talked about emotion and heartbreak, and he didn't have to hide behind this rapper stereotype of getting bitches and money, because that wouldn't have been true. Yeah, he rapped about those things in a braggadocious manner when he wanted to show off, because yeah, that's cool. Yeah, okay, it's cool. But it's not the real songs that drew me into him. Masculinity isn't this defined thing. It's whatever you want it to be. And I know I've kind of said that we have to be more tolerant, but in fact, looking back at it, we have to get rid of the idea of a normality in the first place. There's no idea of a normal man or of the man. There is no nothing as a man, okay? Biologically, you're a male or a female, whatever. But your identity has nothing to do with you being a man or a woman. It has to do with all the multiple character traits and personalities and differences within you that you have. Because you're a human being. Human beings are not binary, okay? We're nuanced. We have so much depth and interesting features about us. And we have to get away from this idea of masculinity, because masculinity didn't help me. It's not helping any of the men who are committing suicide. And I'm not saying that all suicides are caused by the idea of masculinity, okay? Because some of them are maybe caused by, you know, losing a job, losing a loved one, you know, addiction, all these other issues. But at the core of it, a lot of men are struggling with their masculinity and not realizing that it's a made-up thing in the first place. You're not any less of a man. You're still a man. You're just a human being who has emotions and deals with these things. So when PROGU or these right-wing people and these conservatives and these reactionaries say we need to make more men more masculine because feminists are feminizing the workplace, they're totally, totally missing out on the actual crisis. The crisis is that men haven't lost guidance. It's we've been guided in the wrong way our entire lives, and we got to our destination. I got to my good grades. I got to my girlfriend. I got to my, you know, being able to show off to other people my, you know, status symbols. And they were all superficial. That's what men are realizing. That fulfillment and self-fulfillment doesn't come from these societal constructs. They come from your own personal enjoyment. So we need to understand masculinity is made up and it's murdering us. And we have to change that. So, yeah, this podcast has been a bit of a heavy one. I, of course, talked about a lot of different issues here. It was a bit emotional. I had to stop and think at a lot of times, especially when I was telling my personal story. I hope you guys enjoyed that episode, though. Of course, hit me up on Twitter, in the DMs, on Instagram. We can speak about these things. If anyone who is a man and is dealing with any of these issues, I will also link down in the YouTube video below a link to Calm in the UK. They are a helpline from 5 p.m. to midnight every day, even during the coronavirus, where you can talk about your issues. Yeah, I totally recommend them. I totally recommend speaking to your friends and your family and all these things. And yeah, I hope anyone who's dealing with any of these issues gets the help that they need. And it's been Mohammed Hassan, the creator of the left-wing propaganda machine. I hope you enjoyed this episode on masculinity and why it's murdering us. And I will see you guys in the next episode. Goodbye.